Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's visit with 90-year-old Glenn Bram of Gilroy, California. That's where he was born, and that's where he lives today with his wife of 70 years, Muriel. They were blessed with 5 children and now can count 15 grandkids and 32 great-grandkids. None of those descendants would have ever been born if the timing had been a little different for a teenage Marine on May 14th, 1945, during the Battle of Okinawa. Tell me what happened. Your rifle jammed?
Yeah.
Where was the situation? Where were you and what was going on?
They had sent 2 squads of us in. There was some of the guys, another outfit, were trapped in this little valley. And they sent us in. And we could see them getting picked off down there. So I said, I won't take my squad down. It was just then it says, Pluto, get ready. You're going down there. So you have to do it. So they sent a tank in with us. So we were behind the tank going up this little valley, and a mortar shell came in and hit right on the turret of the tank and put that out of commission. So I was right behind it, and when my rifle jammed, I bent over to fix it, and just then it felt like somebody hit me with their fist in the shoulder, and I in blood blowing all over, so I knew what happened. So about that time everybody was getting hit. In fact, the other squad leader got hit with the same bullet that I got hit with. When it exploded, a chunk of it broke his arm.
Wow.
And right after that, we had this one platoon sergeant that was with us. He sent me a picture of himself after he got home. He got hit right through the mouth. It looked like a dimple on each side. It didn't hit a tooth or his tongue or anything.
Wow, what are the odds of that?
And that all happened just within a few minutes. And finally they sent smoke shells in and told us to go back. So you couldn't see anything from here to you always getting out of that smoke. So we headed back, and I jumped in a shell hole because I got grazed in the arm by just out of the smoke. A bullet hit me in the arm and it hit my cartridge belt. And then I dove in the shell hole, and I dove in on my right side because this one was hurt. And I broke 2 ribs, which I didn't know till afterwards, but I broke 2 ribs. And there were 2 guys in the hole, and they were 2 of the ones that we had gone in to try to get out. And they poured sulfa in my shoulder and everything and helped me get up to the top of the ridge. And then they took me back to the medical center then. But by that time, I had lost a lot of blood. I don't know how many pints of blood they gave me.
Yeah.
But I was still able to walk.
Well, I want to hear more about that, but I want to underscore for people, because they might be saying, well, wait a second, you said if his rifle hadn't jammed, he wouldn't be here. Well, the implication is if you're not bending over to fix that rifle, you're standing up and the shell hits you where?
It would right in the back or the shoulder. I mean,
it would have just blown you in half.
Oh, yeah. Because I still get pieces that work out, like little pimples coming. I've got, I don't know how many pieces still in my neck.
Really?
Yeah.
70 years later.
Yeah.
Wow. But it would have killed you. There's no question.
Oh, yeah,
you wouldn't
absolutely
be here.
Oh, that's right.
So it's a good thing that rifle jammed. But then, so now your shoulder's blown to bits. You dive in the hole. You crack 2 ribs. You can still walk, but you've lost all this blood. I mean, you've got to be just out of your mind. I can't imagine what was going on.
Yeah. Well, I was just happy to get back to the aid station anyway, and then they worked on me. I can remember the doctor asking me if I wanted to save some of those pieces coming out. I could hear him as he was dropping them in a can. I said, no, I don't want them. I did say, is this going to be enough to get me home? He says, it will. Don't worry about it.
Wow. How long of a process was that for you to recover?
Well, I was, I got hit May the 14th. I got home June the 14th. I'd been in the hospital in Guam for a week and then in Pearl Harbor for another couple of weeks. And then I was in the hospital at Pleasanton for a couple of weeks afterwards. But after that, I was able to take care of it myself. But it was such a hole, they couldn't stitch it. They had to use clamps to clamp it together because the stitches kept popping. So it left a pretty good hole.
And I imagine your parents found out when you got hit. They probably got a telegram or something?
They didn't. I wrote and told them that I'd gotten hit and I was coming home, so don't worry about me. They didn't. I was home on a furlough when they got the information that I had gotten hit.
You mean you saw them before they knew that you were wounded?
Well, I told them I was wounded, but...
Okay, so you told them in person before letter actually arrived.
On a letter, I told them that I was wounded.
Yeah.
I did that when I was in Pearl Harbor.
Oh, I get it. Okay. This might be a tough one to answer because I get the sense that there's not a lot that slows you down. If you're 90 years old and you're still golfing, and I can see how much of your life you've spent hunting, I don't think too many things since World War II have slowed you down. But there's got to be some kind of lasting impact of an injury that severe that basically blows off the top of your left shoulder.
Well, I can't raise my arm too high. I mean, when I got discharged, they said, do you want to stay around for a medical discharge? And I said, how long will that take? Well, they don't know. I said, if I can get out now, I'll take it. I'll go now. So they gave me a 20% disability. And I got that for about 2 years, and they called me up and said for another examination to see what it was, and they found out that I should have been getting 40% disability. So they gave me that. It was retroactive, which didn't amount to too much, but it was still quite a bit. So I've been getting that ever since. But I think if I would have stuck around for a medical discharge, I probably could have gotten 50%.
And as far as the way it is today, or for all these years, have you had pain, or it's just kind of limited mobility?
Just limited, but yeah. It bothers my golf swing. I don't have any backswing at all. They tied the tendons too tight, so that's why I can't raise my arm too high.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't bother me that bad.
So you were already home when Japan surrendered?
Yeah, I was home on a furlough.
What was that like for you after every? I mean, you've been at some pretty significant battles against these guys.
Well, I remember my cousin and I went deer hunting. As soon as it was over, we took off, went up to the ranch deer hunting for the weekend. Everybody was celebrating in town, and we went off by ourselves deer hunting.
How much have you told your kids and grandkids and great-grandkids about this over the years?
Very little. I mean, once in a while they'll ask me questions, and I'll tell them something, but I just never cared to even talk about it, really.
You were glad to get home and didn't need to live in the past.
That's right, yeah.
And I know you can't squeeze 70 years into a couple minutes, but what have you been up to since the war ended?
Well, just having kids.
That was Muriel's job.
No, I worked for the Gilroy Lumber Company about 25 years. I retired when I was 55. I had a stroke. I'm with some friends and I were fishing in Idaho, and I had a stroke there. But they wondered what caused the stroke. They gave me all kinds of tests when I got home. Just about 2 weeks before I left to go fishing, the doctor cut a piece of shrapnel out of my neck. And when he was cutting, I could feel it clicking in there on my windpipe. I says, that clicking my wind? No, he says, don't worry about it. He says, there's a lot of things more important than that. He says, it's right on the carotid artery. And I think that's what happened when a chunk of something got in that carotid artery afterwards.
Sure.
That's what caused it.
And you still have pieces of that shrapnel in there.
Yeah.
About how often does one of them work its way to the surface?
Oh, every 6 or 8 months a piece will come out. In fact, my wife pulled one out some years ago. It was just like a little fish hook, and it had about an inch piece of my jacket still hanging on the piece of shrapnel.
Your jacket had been under your skin for all those years?
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. When you think back on that time, and obviously this is a lot of nights spent in foxholes, a lot of days in combat, a lot of close calls, that closest call we just heard about. But what are the things that today maybe you still think about and say, you know, somebody was really looking out for me there, or I'm really proud of how I handled that there?
Well, it's a sense somebody was looking out for me, that's for sure. As far as handling things, the one thing that started me off right, when I first went overseas, we went to Wellington, New Zealand, for replacements for the 2nd Division after Guadalcanal. So some of the guys that were on Guadalcanal were with us. We were getting ready to go to Tarawa. And this one sergeant told me, he says, when you land, make sure you don't go out. When they drop the ramp down, don't go out, go over the side of the boat. He says, if they have a machine gun trained on that ramp, it'll get everybody. So he says, go over the side. Mm. Well, I did. I didn't know how deep the water was, and I couldn't swim. But anyway, it was only up over my chest a little bit. But I remember that's something that probably helped me, just what he told me there.
Sure. You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was the question I was going to ask you that I forgot, with not being able to swim.
Yeah.
Was there ever a point during your time in the service where you thought that was going to be your undoing, where you found yourself in a situation?
I thought that might have been, but I was lucky enough. We were in close enough. In fact, I came in under a pier right afterwards. There was a little pier there, and I came in under that. But some of the ones behind me, they just drowned right there.
Mm-hmm. What are you most proud of with regard to your time in the Marine Corps?
I'm just proud to be a Marine, I guess, that's for sure. I mean, it was a good outfit.
Do you have some pride based on what collectively 16 million Americans in the armed forces and all the people back at home supporting them, what you were able to accomplish?
What bothers me are the ones that came back from Vietnam and Korea with the treatment they got. I didn't think that was right. I mean, we didn't get treated that way when we got home. We got treated as heroes, which the heroes are the dead ones, really.
And there were a lot of those at those battles that you were in and throughout the war, 406,000
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
And that makes me wonder if you have been to the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., to see that wall of gold stars that represents 406,000.
I haven't seen that. We were there before.
When you think of that number, that more than 400,000 Americans died, and you know how close you came to adding to that, what does that mean to you? What do you think of when you consider that?
Well, when you think about the Civil War, it's nothing. Look what they did.
That's true.
But if we hadn't have, a lot of people thought the atomic bomb was terrible. It was bad, but we would have lost a lot more if we would have had to go into Japan.
Mm-hmm.
That saved a lot of lives on both sides.
Was it hard for you? I mean, I'm thinking again of your age. You told us, you know, you were 20 and Muriel was 19 when you got married. Did it take a while for you to get used to being a civilian again, and you're not out there living with all these grungy Marines who haven't had a shower in a month?
No, it didn't. I got over that pretty fast.
And I guess that's the other thing I have to ask you. If you've been married for 70 years, you must have some great sage advice for us, because, you know, a lot of us aspire to be able to say that someday. What's your secret?
There's a little sign right above you there.
Never miss a good chance to shut up?
Yep. That's it. Whenever something's starting, I just look at that. And it's
Do you have any more of those? Can I take one home with me? Well, Glenn, I just want to say thank you for serving our country and for telling us a little bit. Is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you think people should know?
Can't think of anything, really. You did pretty good. Like I say, I remember more about the poker games and crap games and blackjack games.
You were pretty good at those?
Yeah, I did pretty good. In fact, just before I got discharged, I was up at Mare Island. I put in a call to Muriel. There was a crap game. At that time, the phones weren't very fast. You had to wait a half an hour before your call could get through. So there was a crap game going on right by the telephone. So I got in there. By the time the phone rang, I had $300 and a wristwatch. I used that $300 to buy her a ring.
There you go. Those crap games paid off.
Yeah.
And with that, we're out of time for today's show. Don't forget to pull up that short video of Glenn on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.